So you guys did it, I hear, huh? You quit meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Sold the building?
Mm-hmm.
You guys are nuts.
That's what I told them.
poor Brock, you're not enjoying this as much as some others might be.
I'm a little upset about it.
That's okay. I not everybody gets on the same page at the same time. And how's this process going? I mean, you settled in it, you're frustrated with it, fighting it, screaming, loving it. It can all be in different places. That's what I was going to say about the way God's inviting us to walk with Him. So much of what we've understood Christianity to be and religion to be is we've all got to think the same things and feel the same things at the same time. And that's not life, is it? It's not the way life works. The same day my granddaughter was being born, the same night my granddaughter was being born in a hospital, we didn't know it at the time, but Sarah's principal, a man of 55 years of age, was dying in the emergency room of a heart attack. On the same day, such great joy for one family, such great grief for another, and that's life. Life's not all about, we feel all the same way about the same thing at the same time. So I really kind of know, how's it, how are you guys feeling about it? We'll talk through some things over the next 3 hours here and then 3 hours later tonight, but just give me a feel for it, if you could. Just how's it going? I mean, are you guys okay?
Okay.
Are we okay?
I think what's come up now more is just the thought of adjusting schedules and such.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, the last couple weeks I know what I've battled the most in loneliness.
Okay.
And, you know, the Lord keeps saying that part of why He's bringing us through this is because He's jealous for our time and jealous for us to go to Him with the things in our hearts instead of always going to another person where we're not seeking Him.
Mm.
But that's a hard adjustment.
Oh.
Because
yes,
loneliness is part of that.
Yes, it is.
You know? And that doesn't mean we don't need to get together and such, because we do.
Yeah.
But we're just still adjusting.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And then when you find, when God, I think, gets to work on that element of loneliness in us, and that gets resolved in Him, then our fellowship with other people takes on a different thing. Because I'm not there because I need you. I'm there because I'm experiencing something and you're experiencing something. And the joy of the partnership is different than, well, we're just meeting each other's loneliness. And so but you're right. It's when you get thrown out of something that you've been comfortable with for a long time, everything gets disoriented a bit. Yeah, so that's good.
I think when it first happened, I mean, I thought that it was going to happen, but when it happened and we closed the doors, you know, it was, I think I felt like some abandonment issues kind of came up for me. And it went on for like about a week. I was feeling kind of, even though I knew that it was going to happen and I heard God say this is what's going to happen, And somebody came up to me and said, well, you missed the church. I said, no. I mean, I know that this stuff needs to come out, you know? And so facing Him, it just seems, I don't know, there's a fuller now on the other side of that. It's just, there's just more of Him for me right now.
Yeah.
You know, there's just...
Good.
I don't know. It's like, it's not in that building. It's in Him. It's just fuller right now. I'm enjoying it.
Dave and I talked about getting together and maybe spending some time talking about thriving outside the box. How do we thrive outside the box? And Sarah and I have lived outside of what I want to... First of all, we decide what box that is. Because some people think, well, the box is we just don't meet on Sundays anymore. And that's not the box, because you can still meet on Sundays, obviously. I mean, any day of the week you want to. But how do we thrive outside this box of what I would call the system of religious obligation? That's the box. And you can drag that box home with you if you want to and share it at home. So just the fact that you don't do it Sunday in a building doesn't mean you still don't want to do it, and that some of us haven't been significantly wired to that box. I've been wired to that box for 42 years of my life, and I've spent the last 10 watching God unwire it. And it's been a joy. I say to people all the time, and I truly mean it, my best days now, my best days in the system are still worse than my worst days outside it. That wasn't true that first 2 years or 2.5 years of feeling horribly disoriented and horribly lost and unconnected and, gosh, did we do the right thing? And all the disapproval we got from people that we love deeply and that we wanted to respect us and approve us. I was with some folks in Elk Grove last night. I stopped to have dinner and share with some folks down there that are at interesting points in this transition. They don't live near the group of folks that's moved together. I hope you know how rare this is, that a significantly sized group of people would, by choice, disorganize themselves the way you have.
You mean over five?
Huh?
Over five?
Yeah.
No, five people.
Or five people, yeah. I mean, I told the story this, and I don't know if all of you have heard the story. I was with a group in New Zealand this summer in a little town called Fairlie, and I wrote a bit of it on my blog, and it got passed all over the world, and now I get email all the time from people going to New Zealand saying, we want to meet the people in Fairlie. So I said, I'll just pass your email on to them. I don't think they wanted to become world famous over my blog, so if they write you back, then maybe you'll get to connect with them, and if they don't, please don't hold it against them, because they're getting a ton of requests. Everybody wants to go visit these folks. 25 years ago, they were part of a fellowship that existed for 70-plus years of a particular denominational bent. And they don't offer their story as a model for anybody else. When we sat with them, when I sat with them, Sarah and I, this summer, it was 25 years after the events I'm now going to describe to you. So it's 25 years later they've lived without this. But they had this congregation, and they had a building, and they were doing the normal church thing that we've all probably grown up in or learned about. And somewhere in the process, or not early on, but toward this, they were going through a number of different pastors. I'm 70 years old now as a group. You've gone through different pastors, and they just had hired a new one to come and take care of them. And this new pastor turned out to be an autocrat, and the people were really unhappy, and they wanted him to leave, but he'd just been hired, and so eventually somebody from out of town came and talked to this man and just asked him, did God call you to be here? And he said, well, I'm here. And he said, well, God called you to be here. And he said, well, I'm here. And he said, well, I think you have to decide if God's called you or not, and if not, you ought to be in town, and you ought to be out of town in 30 days. And he didn't give him a what if. He just said, I feel like if God hasn't really called you here, you should leave. On the 30th day, he left. He left town. And so the group got together and were trying to get another pastor, and they were interviewing other pastor possibilities. And one of the guys they were interviewing said to him, can I ask if God's asked you guys to have a pastor here? They said, what do you mean? I said, well, why are you guys hiring a pastor? They said, well, because we don't have one and we need one. He said, have you guys asked God about this? And they said, well, no, we hadn't asked it. We just kind of assumed. And so they decided they would pray about it. And the congregation, the details would take forever, but the short list is about 3-4 weeks later, there was a group of them, of the kind of the key people there, that were saying, we feel like God's not asking us not to have a pastor. And so I shared that with the congregation. The congregation said, yes, that sounds good to us. And I said, so what are we going to do? And so then they tried to pastor themselves for a while, and it wasn't working. So they asked God again, you know, what should we be doing? And I'm talking about, they're not just going and having a conversation. This is over months of talking and praying. But they really felt like one of the men came back from a prayer time and he shared with the group. He said, I feel like God's asked us to dismantle the institution. And so the rest of them said, what does that mean? They said, oh, it just means we just stop. And nobody thought that was a great idea, except, and even the guy suggesting it didn't think it was a great idea. But he said, I just feel like this is what's been on my heart. But after some time of praying, more and more people started feeling like that is what he's asking us to do. And so they stopped. Finally, the way they did it was, let's just stop for 6 weeks. Let's just, for 6 weeks, not meet here and see what God does. And 6 weeks later, they got together to see how it was going, and to a person among them, they all said, we're done. God's done with this. So what do we do with the building? And it was an undercurrent to this, too, of particularly how they had done it. And they're not saying this is true of any other group, in any other building, in any other place in the world. But for them, they felt like part of what they had become an abomination to God. And they didn't mean that in a real Old Testament, fire is going to fall on your face and kill you kind of thing, but just that what they had engaged had somehow robbed them of God's life, and it wasn't just God wanted something different. This was wrong, and they needed to leave it. And so they're going to put the building on the market and sell it, and then some people just felt like, no, that's not, and I'm not offering this for you guys at all, but they said, no, we don't feel like that's right. Yeah, I know you guys are in escrow. That's a good thing. And so then they come up with this idea. They felt like God said dismantle it. So maybe that meant the building, too. So they offered it to the fire department to burn it down as a training exercise. And so the fire department was real excited. It's a little tiny village in New Zealand. It's a group of probably about 120 people in a town of about 1,200 people. So it's about a tenth of the community. And so they decided that they'd have the fire department burn it down. But by the time the fire department was getting all the permits to do that, the neighborhood really complained and screamed, saying, "We don't want that big a fire in the neighborhood." So,
yeah.
No. So then they still didn't feel free to sell it, and they kept coming back to, "But God told us to dismantle it." So on a Saturday morning, five men showed up in the building with chainsaws. And over the next few days, they sawed the building down, loaded it in dump trucks, and hauled it to the dump. Now, some of the furnishings in it that they thought had value to their denomination, they offered them back to the denomination, and they took them. The denomination wanted the building, but they said, "No, sorry, we're not doing that." And some of the things they said they had particularly felt like had been offensive to God, like the offering plates, the communion table, some other things, they took those out and burned them. They didn't give them away, they burned them. That's 25 years ago. This group now, we met with about 40 of them one evening in a home. We met probably 80 or 90 of them in the course of the days we were there. Some of them obviously are older and have passed on in 25 years. We also met some of the kids that were now 20 and 25 and 24, so had never known anything other than what they had been living the last 25 years. And we found people incredibly alive, gathering together in various ways as God led them to do it. Nothing regular, nothing routine. I stopped to fill up gas one day, our rental car in town, and came inside to do the credit card transaction with the gal at the counter. And she said, "You don't sound like you're from around here." I said, "No, I'm from the States." I said, "We're just visiting." She said, "You're visiting Fairly?" And I said, "Yeah, we're visiting Fairly and some folks here." "Who are you visiting Fairly?" she said. I said, "Oh, there's some people. They used to have a church building in town." "Oh, that lot," she says. That's what she said. They're known. And people came to them the week after they dismantled the building. People were coming to them saying, "You know what, now that you don't have that building, we want to know what you know about God." And their chance to reach the community was incredible. The whole community knew it. The whole community still knows it. One of the ladies in the group just felt called to start a home for retired people, because there wasn't a place for more people who needed care in retirement. And she just felt like the Lord told her not to do it with public funds at all, which are available in those communities, in those countries, much more than in the States. And she started this home, and people just started giving to it, and farmers brought food by, and we were there. Now they've got a huge home. It sleeps about 25 people. They've got a staff, and she just won some award from the Queen of England for community service. This started 20 years ago just because God said to open her home, and it's moved on now. They've got it, and somebody gave them another home, a big home that was more of a commercial kind of area. But I could probably count on two hands and some of my toes the number of groups I know that have willingly, just following God's leading, even sometimes against their better sense, to do some of what you guys have done together. That's one story from 25 years ago. They've gone on to thrive marvelously. And God's life's among them, and the touch they have with the community is incredible. And they're really not a they anymore in the sense of that's a people that has a name of some kind. They're called that lot by the people around them. And so it's a marvelous story. I think it illustrates what, for most of us who spill out of it, end up spilling out of it alone, or groups have to leave some existing thing out of a lot of pain and broken relationships. So I think it's a better way to do it. You find folks willing to walk out of it together.
You know, one of the things that I have experienced that I've gone through a lot of the disconnectedness too, and a lot of the almost despair, you know, it's like, "Oh my gosh, you know, I can't seem to do this right or connect it or whatever, you know." But I've been highly criticized by believers, other that don't go to this body, but by believers who think that we're totally doing the wrong thing,
yep,
that we're just way off out into left field, and then personally, for, you know, look what it's produced in your life, da 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 da. And yet, what's happening is that the people who are either non-believers or who have come out of the religious system and want nothing to do with it anymore are being drawn to what they see. It's like, "You're kidding.
Yep.
You actually did that?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing now? What do you do if you don't go to church? What do you do?"
Yeah.
And it's like they are really interested. They are really asking questions. They're really drawn to whatever. It's like, "Gosh, you mean you don't go to? You mean you don't go on Sunday morning?" It's this whole. They just can't believe it. And it's neat because they're asking
That's
questions.
Good.
You know, they're wanting to know.
That's good. That's good. And it's great to, I think, learn to live in this environment differently without the idea that everybody should be doing this. But sometimes this is what God's asked us to do, and we're doing it. And other people, if they get hungry for the reality of it, because the answer wouldn't be from God's heart that, "Well, we'll close down all the Sunday morning things and then everything will be great with the body of Christ. Because that wouldn't be true. It wouldn't be true. But as God invites us to Him, and I think the whole heart of whatever, I really shy away from terms like relational Christianity. I use it on the website, and then when people start using it, I stop using it and find something else because it'll just become another thing.
Yeah.
But the heart of it is that, really. It's not relational Christianity in the sense that most people think relational Christianity is house church. Well, it's smaller group stuff. Well, like I said, you can take all this religion home with you and share it there and kill each other there. There's lots of ways to kill each other.
Yeah.
So what is this box? And I think that the analogy I'd like to maybe use today to help us to talk about this, because this is probably fresh on my mind because Sarah bought Finding Nemo a couple months ago, so we had watched the old Finding Nemo thing. But I think there's some great illustrations in the idea of God's life as an aquarium and fish in an aquarium versus God's life as fish in the open sea. And so we talk about the box, which I mean the box, it's not just a church institution. That's not the box. The box is what I would describe as this system of religious obligation. It's the same thing that Paul dealt with the Galatians or the Ephesians or the Corinthians. Almost every book Paul writes, he writes to a group of people who started out thriving in the life of Jesus and ended up in a box. And he'd write to him saying, "You foolish Galatians, who's bewitched you? Before your eyes, Jesus was clearly portrayed as crucified. How do you who began by the Spirit think you'll go on to perfect yourself through human effort?" So already they've crawled into a box, and why Paul is so passionate about this box is this box doesn't work. The great advantage we have with Paul being the one the Holy Spirit used to write most of our New Testament is the fact that Paul was a religionist before he was a believer. He had lived in a perfected state of religion. He had excelled in that box of religion. He had come to the pinnacle of it and found out it had left him empty. Found out that his own sense of trying to do good for God led him to act in a way that was directly opposing God's interests. He was killing Jesus people in God's name, for Pete's sakes. And described himself as the Pharisee of Pharisees, as to the law found faultless, as to legalistic righteousness absolutely perfect. That's how Paul describes himself before that moment on the road to Damascus. Afterwards, he describes himself in those moments as the chiefest of sinners, saying that box of performing for God, even if you're the best at it, still leaves you empty and still leaves you missing out on the reality. See, now Paul knew that. And Paul knew it to such a degree. What I like about Paul is I think Paul could sniff out religion 3,000 miles away. He's hanging out in Antioch going, Galatians, that doesn't smell too good. What are y'all doing up there? And I think this box that I want to talk about and now how to thrive outside, because everything changes. If you're a fish that's grown up in an aquarium and somebody tosses you in the open sea, your odds of living aren't good. That's why fish stay in aquarium. I don't like animals like that captive. My family wanted to get a bird at one point, and I really hate birds in cages because I think God made birds to fly. And when that poor thing's going to be in that cage all the time, and then if you're going to take it out, you have its wings clipped so it won't fly away. And so it really ceases to be a bird in my view. And I know other people enjoy birds, and that's fine, but I never wanted to have one. I sit there and look at that stupid bird in that cage, and I'm going, gosh, I'd love to let him go, but it was a cockatoo or something. Cockatiel. I don't forget which one. And if we let it go, it would die. It wasn't born to live in our environment. So we had to keep it in a cage. And I think it just makes a great example of if we've learned, as Sarah and I made some of this transition, we'd grown up in an aquarium of what we called Christianity. And a fish can live in an aquarium. There's water there. There's food there. But there's also glass there. And I think for many of us that maybe how you get here from 5 years ago to some of the things you've been through is that you found yourself trying to live in God's freedom and bumping against bits of glass that you didn't think ought to be there. And probably if we had this analogy right, we'd have this aquarium sitting in the ocean where the water comes up to the aquarium. And the fish all talk about, you know what, maybe we could jump out of here. And the other fish are saying, oh, no, 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 you'll die out there. And even in the whole Finding Nemo, if you've seen the Pixar flick, they're trying to save poor Nemo who's ended up in an aquarium. And to make that really scary, they had to have this horrible girl that was going to adopt Nemo, that was going to terrorize the poor fish, if you remember. Because actually getting people to believe that an aquarium is not life is tough, because it's, what is it about an aquarium, comparing it to the open sea, that has some benefit?
Safety.
Yeah, there's no sharks in the aquarium. Unless a predator fish gets in the aquarium. Some people think that's fun. Throw a predator fish in there. And most every religious institution I've been a part of did have some predator fish in there. And they just soon eat you as look at you funny. You know, I know you guys didn't have any of that among you, which is kind of cool. But I've been in places that had some of that. I'm being generous. Don't fight it now. We don't want to point anybody out. I'm just trying to be generous with y'all. Let's not...
We've all been the predator fish.
Yeah, there you go. That's the honest bit. We've all been the predator fish at one time or another. So let's describe what this aquarium looks like. Because I think if we just see it as, well, we stopped having services and we sold our building, we'll miss the point, right? So let's describe that box a bit. One of the things I already talked about, somebody wrote me last week and he had read something on my website. And so they had he wrote he had just declared his home a no PBA zone. And PBA, I wonder what he means by that. And you have to read further down in his paragraph. And he defined PBA as performance-based acceptance. Now, wouldn't you love to grow up in a home that does not have performance-based acceptance? I think the whole book of Galatians, to be honest with you, is about the body of Christ being a non-performance-based acceptance zone. That we're not acceptable to God by our performance. That's not how the cross works. In fact, we had the cross because we couldn't by our own performance. So one of the things I think that defines this box is that our likability or dislikability, or what you'll experience with now Christians who are still inside some of those boxes with you being on the outside, is that now you have their disapproval. Because you're not conforming to this system of religious obligation that we've inherited past 2,000 years. And we're calling it Christianity. And it's so far from what the founder intended for us to experience. So I want to talk about this box and this aquarium and the open ocean and the safety that the aquarium provides. But it's a false safety. It really is. Because if the owner stops coming by and dropping food in every now and then, you die in that. If a predator fish gets in, you die if you're not a predator fish. If the filter gets plugged up and the power goes bad, no one's around. The aquarium is an illusion of safety. But the open ocean, oh my goodness, nobody's dumping food in every night. And there's sharks out there. And suddenly it moves from dependence on the owner of the aquarium, or the food dispenser, or the cleaners. And so the second thing I want to say about this box that we're going to talk about is not only it's performance-based acceptance, and we manipulate each other by our sense of approval, and we get manipulated by that, you know? Someone sent me a bulletin notice from a congregation recently. It said, it was funny, because the title of it was, Finally, Guilt-Free Sundays. That was the title of it. And what it was about was they were beginning a Saturday night service. So now you could come to the Saturday night service and have guilt-free Sundays because you've already done it on Saturday night. Now, notice what they're dispensing. They're still dispensing guilt. See, now if you're not the Saturday night thing, the guilt you're feeling on Sunday, that is really something you're supposed to feel. And we were all wired to that. I was wired to that very much, that my performance within the system and people's approval, affirmation, adoration, if you want to go to that, great sermon, loved what you shared today, whatever, all of that becomes very intoxicating brew. And it just gets its tentacles in us. And you really know it when you're no longer jumping through those hoops and people are saying stuff like, and you call yourself a Christian? And now you don't have the approval of your family. You don't have the approval of people around you who think you've got to be in a Sunday morning event to be okay with Jesus. Now you're going to deal with disapproval in a way you've never known before. Because most of us have learned not only to just, you know, go to church on Sunday, but do it well so that people think well of us. And then we even feel a little bit ill of people who didn't make it, who aren't as committed and don't come or don't come on time or One of the couple that I was with in Elk Grove yesterday said they went to one of these things recently on Sunday morning. Just, they've been out of it for a year or so, and they've been really struggling. And they thought, well, we'll just go back and see what it's like. Well, they got there 15 minutes late, and as they got to the nursery door, there's an usher standing there in front of the door saying, nursery's closed at 9:15. No more kids. And I went, you gotta be kidding. Can't bring our kid in. And I said, really? We can't. He said, well, you're welcome to take him into service with you, but no, we close at 9:15. We ask people to be here by then. You should be here by then. And they just kind of went, that's unbelievable. Started to walk away. He said, oh, are you new? They said, well, yeah, I guess we're new. He said, well, you know, we can't make an exception for new people. And they just went, you know what? Now we remember why we didn't come here anymore. And they walked out. They just, now we remember why we don't do this. Incredible. The glass wall. Once you live outside the glass wall, because one thing I would think about a fish and a glass wall, how do you know it's there? Until you hit it. Then you got to figure out it's there. And I don't know about you, but when you go up in religious systems, when I visit religious systems, there's always a little bit about finding out where the boundaries are here, right? Because you know what you can talk about? Sometimes I just say, you're all Trinitarian, you're not Trinitarian. You know, where are the walls here that I'll run into and create a mess in the aquarium? Because I'm not really there. I don't mind visiting aquariums now and then, but I'm not going to live there. And I'm not going to mess it up for them, but I'm kind of like want them to know that this aquarium is sitting in the ocean and the waves of the ocean line up with the level of the aquarium. You can jump out of here. You can come swim in freedom, but you know what? Not everybody wants to come because it's scary. But there's sharks out there. Oh, yeah, there's a few of the sharks. And nobody brings you food. Well, suddenly now it's not, and this is the second thing I wanted to say. One, the performance-based acceptance, not that, or that's what the system is. The second system is, it's a human-controlled environment. Even if it's good humans who are really trying to love God and do godly things for people, which I'm sure is what you guys had going on here. That's the thing I pastored for a long time. I wasn't trying to corrupt people. I wasn't trying to destroy them. I wasn't trying to build a kingdom for myself. I was really trying to help people get this journey. But it was a human-controlled environment. And so if things went wrong, we fixed them. And if things needed to happen, we programmed them. And we invited people to come and made them feel guilty if they didn't come. And it's a human-controlled system, which is always the illusion of control and never the reality. Because no matter what we control, God just keeps doing what He does anyway, doesn't He? And what we find is, and I think what the bondage of this human-controlled environment is, we can be there on Sundays or Wednesdays or Tuesday nights, whenever, but none of us live there. We live in a world where there still are sharks, and there still are ways to be devoured and destroyed in just the world we live in. So the church becomes then a cocoon, or the congregation becomes a kind of cocoon of some sense of safety. But then if you've ever been torn apart by another Christian, then all of a sudden that doesn't feel so safe either. And many people who spilled out of these systems have spilled out in the disillusionment and anguish of being torn apart by another brother or sister, sometimes a leader who said, you've got to conform to what God has shown me, or you're living in rebellion and unsubmission. And that's what's just so the human-controlled environment, the whole false belief that human effort can accomplish the work of God. That's the system of religious obligation. Even down to, you have the power to change you. And if you were just more disciplined, more obedient, more whatever, your life would be perfect. That's a lie. That's not so. You don't have the power to change you. You don't. Apart from Him, you can do nothing. So what the system actually breeds, when it bases our acceptance on performance, and our motivation by human, or at least the impetus for that by our human effort, and your human effort isn't good enough to get you to conform to the system, what happens?
Failure.
Huh? You fail. But what do you do with failure in the system? What do you do with it?
Guilty.
You feel guilty, but what do you do with it when you're among the folks?
You can point it out in them and you get credit for
it. Oh yeah, you do that to other people. You can. Yeah, you can do that. That's good. What else do you do?
Cover up.
Yeah. You pretend, don't you? I've been having fun with this book. I don't know if any of you have seen this book, Blue Like Jazz. It's a dumb title, but here's the bottom of it says, Non-Religious Thoughts on Christian Spirituality. This guy is on a fun journey. It has nothing to do with, I don't think there's any like church answers in here. It's just all about his own personal journey. And he tells a bit of the story, which I think is, it tells me why God's working in him in the way he is. He was, he graduated college, and he was part of a college group, and Houston, and some other college minister had to miss a meeting and asked if he could teach that day. So he did, and he really liked it. People really liked it. So he got to teach more and more. Finally, he took over the group. And about 2 years after he's taken over the group, I got to read this one line. Oh, he says, so I was asked to speak again, and I jumped at the chance like Homer Simpson at a donut. And pretty soon I was teaching all the time, and I swam in the attention and the praise. I loved it. I lusted for it. I almost drowned in it. That's what he says. 2 years later, he's going to the pastor. He's been given the college degree. 2 years later, he's going to the pastor saying, I'm really done. I need to just get away for a while. I'm going to go away. And the pastor kind of said, why are you going away? And he said, how long have you gone? He said, I don't know. He just said, I need to find God again. And the pastor couldn't relate to this. And the group's going great. Everybody loves you. You're a great teacher. Man, you got to hang in here. And he's just saying, yeah, but I don't get it. It's not happening. And finally he said, this is what I think this is funny. Pardon the language here. This is his language, not mine. He said to a guy the other day, God bless you. But what does that mean? I've been saying that stuff all my life. But what does that mean? When I started thinking about all the crap I say, all the cliches, all the parroted slogans, I realized I have become an infomercial for God, and I don't even use the product. Wow. Isn't that a great statement? I become an infomercial for God, and I don't even use the product. And he said, I don't want to be that anymore. So you got to go away, his pastor asked. Yeah, where are you going? America. America? He looked confused. America. We're in America right now, Don. He said, yeah, I know. But the other parts to America, I'd like to see other parts. I was looking at a map the other day, you know, and Texas was sort of brown with some green, a few hills, but then other places with more green, with big lumpy mountains, and I'd like to go to those places. He says, do you think God is out there somewhere, out there in those lumpy places? And he says, I think God is everywhere. Then why do you have to leave? Because I don't want to be here anymore. I don't feel whole here. Listen to this language. I feel, well, partly whole, incomplete, tired. It has nothing to do with this church. It's all me. Something got crossed in the wires. And I became the person I should be, not the person I am. And it feels like I should go back and get the person I am and bring him here to the person I should be. Are you following me at all? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking about these green lumpy places? And the conversation went on like this for about an hour. And I went on and on about the real me was out there in the green lumpy places, and I wasn't making any sense. I can't believe my pastor didn't call the guys with the white coats to take me away. And then he said, I suppose that I wanted back. I suppose what I wanted back then is what every Christian wants, whether they understand themselves or not. What I wanted was God. I wanted tangible interaction. But even more than that, to be honest, I wanted to know who I was. I felt like a robot or an insect or a mysterious blob floating around the universe. I believed if I could contact God, he would be able to explain who and why I was. Now here's a guy succeeding in the system of religious obligation. He's got all the affirmation he needs and he's addicted to it. He's drowning in it. And he has the honesty to realize it and step away. So many people like that today. So many people just saying, you know, I keep hitting the glass. But what do you do when you're trying to perform and you can't perform? You pretend. You pretend to perform. I'm failing miserably inside and you don't know it, because when I come here, it's all smiles and great and oh boy, God bless this and yay that. And we keep our failures to ourselves. And this whole system then becomes a group of people who are pretending to be who we're not. We're pretending to be the people we should be instead of being the people that we are. Should is a great word in performance-based systems. System of religious obligation is always about shoulding. And it's always about this controlled environment and this conformity. We've all got to be the same place, be the same time. And if I hear one more worship leader stand up front and say, this is the day the Lord has made, we should be smiling. You people look depressed. And what we're inviting everybody to do is to pretend to be in that moment what we're not. If you're in despair today, God loves you enough to meet you there. God doesn't need you pretending you're not there. If you're failing to your flesh, well, you know what? Look around the room. Every one of us here is failing to our flesh. Some hide it better than others. That's all it is. None of us is perfect. None of us is whole. And if God doesn't change us, we're not changed. I can pretend to be different than I am, but only God changes who I am. I was telling them this morning, something that I have asked God to change in my life for 40 years changed this November. I can tell you the day it changed. It's a way I think about things that I have fought all my life because I don't like the thought. I know the thoughts are wrong, and I didn't know how to fix them. I've begged God to fix them. I've tried to discipline them out of my life. And it's not what you all think of it. Somebody said, oh, you were gay. And I said, no, I didn't have that. Wasn't that? I mean, everybody always assumes it's sexual or something. And I'm not describing it yet because I want to let the work be done first. So I'm not saying it's a way of thinking about people and others in life. When that morning when I woke up and that part of me was gone, and I knew it was gone. It's been weakening over time. I've seen it weaken, but I knew when it was gone. I knew. When I'm sitting there going, why now? And what did I see? That's where I start. What did I do? I didn't do anything. I just kept coming to Him. My keep coming to Him. God's changing things in my life. Now, see, when you know that, you're safe to be around other people who need change. Because you're not going to say, well, this is what you need to do. You should be doing this. You should be doing that. So that's how religious-based systems work. They'll give us an illusion. There's a certain amount of growth that fish can undergo in an aquarium. I met God in an aquarium, if we're going to use our analogy. I came to hunger for Him there. I came to learn His scriptures there in ways that made my heart hunger for what I couldn't see there. When I got frustrated with the aquarium because I kept running into walls. I got tired of bruised noses. There's got to be something different. And I didn't even probably jump out on my own. Actually, a bunch of predator fish got together and threw me out. That's how I got out. And it was horribly disorienting. It really was. But in the 2 years that have followed, these are some of the things that I've seen us, Sarah and I, find great freedom in. No longer performance-based acceptance. God loves us where we are. And it's God's love that transforms us into who He wants us to be. Come on in! You know these people? Okay. Okay, good. You're in the right place then, huh? Good. Yes, pull down some chairs or whatever. We're kind of pretty loose about it here. If we're out of them.
How long did it take you before you could thank God for what has happened?
That's a good question. How long was it till you could thank God for what happened?
Yeah, so you really came to realization that it was
okay. Well, and that's a journey too a bit, isn't it? Because the first day I'm grateful no longer to be in a box with predator fish, so immediately I'm thrilled about that. But I've also lost my salary. I've also lost some longtime friends. There's also things being said about my wife and I that aren't true. Those are very painful things. I would say it was 2 years in that process before we finally looked back and could say to the predator fish, oh, you did us a great favor. You didn't know what you were doing. It's that Joseph's language, you know, what you intended for evil, God's used for great good. And now I look back, in fact, I was just with one of those predator fish recently. In fact, the head predator fish. Because God's funny. God's a funny guy. What I love about being outside of a human-controlled environment, see, human-controlled is we do everything. And me and my brother have been unreconciled for 10 years, a brother I walk deeply in fellowship with together. And I've tried to open a door to healing. We've met a couple of times trying to see if there could be some healing to this, because he was my best friend for 15 years. I still care. I don't feel any less. I think when I knew some healing had happened is when I knew that in spite of all that he did to me, I didn't love him any less than the day before it happened. And I'm sad for where he is. I wouldn't walk with him today in life or ministry because I think he's in a dangerous place, but I don't love him less. And I've always just said, God, I want you to heal that someday if that's in your heart to do it. Well, I think I shared this with me last time I was here, but in February, I share the story. If I did, just tell me you've shared that story, Wayne. Stop it. But last February, I was driving through that town, meeting a man who wanted to meet with me after I'd spoken somewhere else, was driving through Visalia. So I stopped there to see this man. And as I was driving in early that morning to meet this man for breakfast, I felt like I had this thought run through my brain that I now know was God. At the time, it seemed like a weird thought. The thought was, you're going to see Mark today. Now, the reason I sometimes think that's God, because I never talk to me in the second person. I never say, Wayne, you this. I don't. But I said, you're going to see Mark today. I thought, I'll see Mark. That's kind of weird. So I walked into the restaurant looking around to see if Mark was in there. And he wasn't. But I had a bit of an appointment with this guy. And I met him at 7:30. And we're going to be together till 9. And another appointment at 9. Somebody else is coming in to meet me, same restaurant, at 9 o'clock. At 8:10, his phone rings, the friend I'm with. And he's got an appointment that has showed up on the wrong day at his place of business, but came from out of town. He said, I really feel like I got to go take this appointment. I said, go. I said, it's no problem for me. I said, I got books to read. I got things to do. I said, I got another appointment at 9. I'll just wait for that. So he excused himself. After only about 40 minutes of being together, he had to leave. At 8:12, Mark walks into the restaurant. Mark's got an 8:15 appointment in the restaurant. As he comes in, he says, what are you doing here? I said, oh, I'm just, you know, waiting for a guy. So I was with a guy and waiting for another guy. And he said, oh, I'm so nice. I said, Lipson, I'm talking to you. He said, I got some people coming at 8:15. Just then his cell phone rings. His 8:15 isn't going to be there till 9 o'clock. He's standing at my table. Is God not amazing?
Yeah.
I'm 200 miles from where I live. I'm in a restaurant in a town of 100 and some odd thousand people. The fact that we'd both be there at the same time with canceled appointments, can you see God's fingerprints here? Okay, God wants to open the door. So we've begun a dialogue. We met together for 45 minutes there. Went back. He came down and visited me in my home. We spent about 3 hours talking together. I can't tell you all that's going on in that yet. It's not whole yet, I can tell you that. But it's God's job, not mine. I'm along for the ride. I drove through there last time I left. Last September, I was up down here with the other bunch of folks across town. Drove home, I called him, said, drive, because he said, I want to get together with you sometime. I said, I'm driving through town, you free? He canceled a staff meeting, which he never does, to meet me at a restaurant. And we had another couple hours to talk about this, what God might do to heal. And he sat there this last time. It was a funny comment. He sat there and he said, you are living everything we talked about for 15 years, aren't you? It felt so good to be outside the aquarium. So I'd say it took me a couple of years anyway to really find some freedom in this, to really see that God was big enough to provide for us in every way that means, to provide for us financially, which was big for Sarah and I, obviously, but to provide for us fellowship, to provide for us relationships, to provide for us meaningful engagement with the world that was far more meaningful than anybody coming to a Sunday service and sitting through. And it has just changed our life. God, we talked about that this morning. I think a lot of our little steps of obedience give God the opportunity to win us to a level of trust that we don't have any idea about. That's why we're afraid. But God knows the only way He's going to win us to that is He's going to show us. If I didn't get my salary ripped away and watch God provide for me the next 2 years, I would still be talking about God as my provider but not living it. Now I live it. I don't have to do one thing today God doesn't ask me to do. I don't have an obligation to anybody that pays a salary for me. I simply do what God asks me to do, and God has incredibly provided for that for 10 years. If He changes that tomorrow, I'm okay with that. I've told Him that. I don't care if we get a real job tomorrow and I do something 8 to 5 for a while. In some ways, it'd be kind of fun to do that. But I don't waste one more second of my time thinking about whether or not God's providing for Sarah and me. I just don't. Now, I always talked about God. But that's what I think that's great about the system is we use all the right language, but we don't live in the reality of the things we talk about because we're learning to pretend. This man not finding himself and then saying, oh, my God, I want to. I got to find out. And he finds out who God is and who He really is. And he found it outside the system of those things that pretend to provide what it cannot provide. The other thing about the system, I'll give you a few more things about it that we'll talk about here. That Jesus is an additive in the system of religious life. Relationship's good, but you don't need it. Because everyone else is doing it for you. Getting a sermon from somebody who's studying all week just to tell you what you need to know, that'll help you out. You got worship people that are ready to sing and lead worship and do things. And so, really, we remember talking about, if Jesus shows up in our service, that's great, but if not, we've got this plan that will make it look like He has. You get it?
Yeah.
It's not always that overt. I think that much goes on much more subtly than that just sounded. But the idea in the system of religious obligation is, yes, we want you to have a relationship with you. Yes, and it's an important part of it, but it's not necessary because everything's provided without it. Outside, and some of you have talked about, I now know I need God in a way I've never depended on Him before. See, the people I was with last night were talking about, they jumped out of the system and immediately embraced house church, and they both tried to, because they were on staff at various religious events on Sunday morning. And so part of that was, you know, we still have a passion for the body of Christ, so they began house churches. And now trying to work with that house church environment has gone a little complicated. And one of them asked me last night, we just have maybe done nothing for maybe like a year or so? And I said, maybe. I said, that's obviously up to Jesus, not me or you. I wouldn't ever say, when you stop, just take a year off. I wouldn't say that. But if Jesus says, don't start something, then don't start something. In fact, I would do it the other way now. I would say, if Jesus doesn't tell you to start something, don't start something. If you just hang out alone for a bit, it's not the end of the world. You're going to find something about you and about Father that'll be incredible. Yeah. What we're afraid of is, well, then the fish aren't going to get together and be the fish together if we don't make them. Oh, the fish love being with other fish. People, when outside of religious environments, there's a funny story Max Lucado told in a book. I can't remember the name of the book, but him and his good friend and his father went fishing somewhere in a camper. And the first day they were there fishing, it poured like cats and dogs. They couldn't get out and fish at all. So they stayed in the camper all day, and they had a bunch of games that they played, and they did all that. And then the next day, it was pouring again. They couldn't fish again. And now this time they were starting, you know, the smelly feet, and they're getting on each other's nerves because they were in this tightly confined space. And the games weren't as fun as they used to be, and so it turned nasty, and they started yelling at each other. Just, you talk about how over these 3 days of this horrible rain, the relationships turned from, boy, excited to be fun together, to they all, and they hated each other by the end of 3 days. And they went home without fishing at all. And what his conclusion in the chapter was, fishermen who don't fish end up hating the fishermen they're with. And I thought, that's a great line. It's a great way of thinking. If we're not engaged in what God's doing alive in the world the way he asks us to be, we end up picking at each other as Christians. And you could describe the whole of Christianity pretty well that way. Read any Christian magazine you want to, and it's Christians picking at Christians. Y'all do it the way we're doing it. You're not doing it right. This is the way to do it. Purpose-driven, seeker-sensitive, whatever. River, just, there's so much. And people in one bit of it look down on people who don't do it the same bit they're doing in it. And it's just, that's the other thing I'd say about these. The Jesus additive is one thing. The other thing is, in an aquarium environment, it's competitive relationships. And if you've got an aquarium, sprinkle some food in the top of that, and you'll see competitive relationships, won't you? Who can get to the food first and the bigger chunks, and they muscle each other out of the way. That's Ezekiel 34. Sheep wander in the water, and the big sheep get out there where the water is nice and clean, and they muddy it for the little sheep that can't go out as far. And if the big sheep had any real compassion for the other sheep, they would say, you know, why don't you drink first, the little sheep, and then we'll come in later. They don't do it that way. Religious environments breed competitive relationships. Why? Because none of us are succeeding, really. We all know we're failing. So I'm hoping I'm just failing less than you are. So to feel like I'm failing less than you are is, I have to point out your failures and embellish my good moments. And competitive environments end up people, what you'll find in these competitive environments is contempt and anger are very much the undercurrent of relationships. We Christians are known in the world as the most angry people in the culture. Our political engagement with this culture is 90% anger. Yeah. Because we feel superior to the pagan world around us. And we exercise that venom on the world, and the world sees it. I see it. The bridge builder work I do, the angriest people at the table are Christians. Now, there's some angry people in the world too, but they're not nearly as angry. This was our country, and you've taken it away, and doggone, we're going to get it back. And so that competitiveness then breeds contempt for the world instead of compassion for the world. Jesus lived in a world with compassion. He encouraged his disciples not to get into the competitive. You are all brothers and sisters, and you have one Father. So don't say, you know, I'm this and I'm that. Don't take titles to yourself. That's the whole Matthew 23 talk. Don't be competitive. You have one Father. You're all brothers and sisters. Just love each other. The pressure to pretend, we've already talked about being part of this system, which is what Galatians is all about. And I think one of the things that defines this system of religious obligation as well is this sense of exhaustion. Christians are always worn out. Have you noticed? I hated hearing this from my neighbor. I heard this from my neighbor. We're trying to have a community meeting in our neighborhood because we had to repair the road. And it was this is where I used to, not where I live now, where we used to live, at a private driveway that 18 neighbors shared, and it didn't belong to the county or the city, and it was falling apart, and we had to fix it. And you had to get all these 18 people together and agree on how we're going to fix it and how we're going to pay for it, and not everybody thinks we need a new road and doesn't want any roads, and they're not paying anything for it and all that stuff. It took 6 months of meetings to try and work through this, and every time we'd finish one meeting, okay, well, we haven't figured it out, so well, when can we meet again? And everybody, all the Christians in the room are, well, I can't Monday night, I got choir, and Tuesday night I got this, and all the nights we could not meet, and one lady, our neighbor, the pagan on the street, heathen, she said, well, I don't go to church, I can meet any night. And when she said it, I felt jealous. I felt, oh my gosh, that would be nice. Because that wasn't my life either. And so exhausted, tired of, I think pretense wears you out. I think guilt wears you out when you don't make it. And you don't feel like you can really pull off the pretense, so you stay home, and then you add guilt to that for staying home. I think all that just wears us out. And Paul, and I think the New Testament scriptures, then invite us to an environment outside this religious system. Does this make sense? Do you understand it?
Yes.
Is there more you want to explore with it? Things you want to add? Because we're going to take a break in a minute, because I don't want to just talk for four straight hours. But yeah, jump in. You bet.
I've enjoyed what's going on, but my wife is having a real hard time because she has certain things that she has felt that things that she feels that they should have been continued within the body, building the body in area of praise and worship and etc. So there's some suffering there that she is going through at this time, and so I'm trying to somehow understand. I mean, I think I understand what's going on, okay, here, but I'm having a very hard time trying to communicate that in relationship to encouraging my wife. You know, I want to stick with the program. You know, I'd be glad he brought us here, you know, until he tells us to go on somewhere else. This is where we're going to continue, but I just think that sometimes what I've mentioned here in relationship to the parameters here are things that kind of control individual lives and thinking. Thinking that this is a real hard step trying to, well, is it godly? Is it the right thing? You know, are we doing the right thing? Does anybody sense or feel what I'm saying? Getting a direction here.
I think we're catching your struggle, and I think also when you feel someone else's struggle, like you're talking about your wife's. Is this your wife here?
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, it'd be easier to talk to her about her struggle.
I can get her to speak up.
That's fine. I don't think this process is easy for everybody, and I don't think it's the same for anybody. If Sarah were here telling you our story, she would tell it very differently than I've told it. Not because she's more honest than I, less so. Although she might say that too, but she would be wrong. She wouldn't say that's cruel to do to her. But we do respond to these things differently. And some things that excite one of us in our partnership may not excite the other one in the partnership. And I think God has an ability to bring us all together and eventually will help us get to the same page. But I don't think we all always get there the same pathway. So I'd be less anxious for how I get her to see than just that you guys love each other while you're not seeing it differently, while you are seeing it differently, trusting that you're in a process here in which God's going to make His truth known to both of you. He just is. He's going to do it. And there's things that people miss, and there's things that some people miss that other people are glad never have to go to again. And that's just the reality of being people. But I want to talk through after we take a break, because I don't think we were just going to go straight through for 3 hours. So we'll take a bit of a break, and you people that have been sucking on tea can get more tea or whatever it is that you need. And but I want to come back and talk about then how do we deal with fellowship, discipleship, worship? What does it look like inside the box between a well? What can it look like outside the box? I think that'd be a real good question, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
To take each of those things. I think that's part of now we're reshifting the thinking. So is it wrong for us ever to get in a room together with some of the gifted musicians and have a night where we're just singing songs to God, and some of us who really enjoy doing that, there's nothing wrong with that? Well, of course there's not. We don't want to do it every week on Sunday mornings anymore. It doesn't mean we can't do it. But that's not just what worship is. Worship is so much more than that. And so we'll talk about those things in the aquarium versus those things outside the aquarium. And I think what you find is, wow, the possibilities of these things become limitless. Because the answer is not... See, that's why I think if we just see the transition between, well, we used to meet Sunday mornings, had a thing called a church, and now we don't have any of that anymore, and a pastor, and now we lost all that. It's not that. It's that we're moving from living in the system of religious obligation, which fits very nicely with buildings and meetings and staff and those things. But now we want to live this life on the outside, not just for the simple exercise of, let's see if we can do this on the outside, but because this is where it will be more real, more vital, more enduring, and have far more options to it that you can ever conceive.